Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass, and 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from Masterclass to their lives. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham. Embracing what's fun with Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080.
I love this song. Diodato, also Sprague Zarathustra, the name of it. You'd remember it as theme from 2001, A Space Odyssey. I'm Morgan Cunningham as Spotlight Connecticut continues in vacation mode, but that just means that we're having fun looking back on some of our favorite episodes from 2023 so far. And I make sure that we say so far because we have half a year of brand new shows yet to come. Now, one of my personal favorites happened in February of this year when I had the chance to talk with Brendan Hall, who went to my high school. That would be Ram High School in Hebron. I'm from Andover. He's from Marlboro. And Brendan was an inspiration to me. He was 2 grades before I was. And he was part of our high school's closed circuit TV news team, which meant that he was reporting and producing video work for a TV station that could only be seen and heard throughout our high school. And when I was new to high school, I said, I want to be part of this. But seeing Brendan's work just solidified that for me, because what he did was really cool. And I learned a lot subsequently by getting into the program that he made popular with me and others as well. And after high school and after college, he continued to pursue not only photography, but video. And then I got the news at the very end of 2022 that he was going into outer space. And while all the TV stations got to talk with him for like a minute, you know, they have all those short news packages, I got to talk with him for a whole hour on Spotlight Connecticut about him going into space. And so coming up on WTIC News Talk 1080, as we enjoy the best of 2023 so far, my conversation with an old high school friend, Brendan Hall, going into space.
This is WTIC in Hartford.
Hi, I'm John Hiller from Granby, and I'm listening to Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Well, I can't believe on the telephone with me is Brendan Hall. He and I went to high school together, Ram High School in Hebron, Connecticut, and he's now going to outer space as part of the Dear Moon crew. And I just got to say, I don't know how to start the conversation with you, Brendan, other than just saying congratulations to you, my friend.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to talk about this.
Well, so many years have passed since you and I have seen one another and have talked, and I should probably just fill the audience in. It all began back in high school, Ram High School in Hebron, and you were a few grades ahead of me. When did you graduate?
I graduated 2012.
That's what I thought, 2012. I was the class of 2014, and when I was in, I believe it was freshman or sophomore year, you were part of Ram News, which was the closed circuit TV news station for all of the students to watch. And there was an elite group of broadcast journalists, and you were one of them. And I remember you had come up with this introduction to Ram News, and it made me think to myself, I want to be part of that. And I guess that you've never stopped with all of the photography and the video work, have you?
No, I got really lucky that I was passionate about it from when I was young. I mean, I started making films around when I was in middle school with just a little camcorder in my yard. And so I did the school news. I was really lucky to have those resources at school and have a chance to take my passion and actually get to implement it in classes and, you know, with great people like you. There's nothing like being around other people that are passionate about the same thing as you. I've just for years chased that. And it's brought me to all these kind of different and eccentric places at times, from documentaries. I made a lot of narrative short films in college. I filmed skateboarding for a series of summers. And so for me, filmmaking has always been just kind of my way of meeting people and having new experiences. So long story short is I kept making films. And now I'm lucky enough to do it for a living, which I think you can share it too, Morgan, is to do something you're passionate about. Is it definitely keeps you going.
It really is. And I'm trying to pinpoint, what was the inspiration for you? Were you at home watching movies one day and you're like, this is cool, I want to experiment with this? Where did this itch from within you come?
I don't even think I quite realized this at the time, but I'd watch a lot of nature specials. I read National Geographic and I watched a ton of movies. And so I was definitely really into it. But I just remember having kind of the itch to capture stuff. For some reason, just the idea of getting a camcorder, filming, I imagine, music videos and little movies with my friends was like the most exciting idea in the world to me. And a lot of what I do now is just trying to take that wonder I had and that pure passion back then and during those years and make sure that's still a part of my day-to-day practice of doing this. Because as pressures come in and doing it for a living, a passion starting so young really changes over time. But I'm just really grateful to have gotten to grow with it a little bit too.
Well, before we talk about going to outer space, which is next for you, you have been exploring the whole Mother Nature, planet Earth thing. Tell us some of the places that you've been to for photography, for video work.
So, I mean, I am lucky enough. I've gotten to travel all over the world, helping film documentaries, helping film videos for brands. And so, man, I've been to Greenland on a shoot with Bill Nye, the science guy. I've been to a lot of countries in Africa, Zambia, Nigeria, Tanzania. I've been to Iceland, the Congo, all around the United States. And I'm finishing a film now in national parks I've been working on for 5 years, actually. And so that film brought me to over 30 different national parks in the United States.
Who are you working with now? National Geographic, another partner?
I work as a freelancer. So I'm a director, cinematographer, and editor. And I have some really nice relationships with different companies, both that create films as well as brands like National Geographic. And so part of, I guess, the excitement, but some people would hate this, is the uncertainty of what I do is sometimes I never know where I'm going to travel, even 2 or 3 weeks in advance. It's very much where jobs come to me and someone thinks I'm a good fit for something or I'm recommended, and I get to go out and do that work.
Wow, if you're learning just, say, 2-3 weeks before a big trip, you don't have a lot of time necessarily to research the project, or do you? Is that enough?
It depends on the project, you know. And with this space project, I'm lucky to have what right now is a year, but could end up being longer than that, to do some deep research and take some time. Although that still feels like it's impending very quick. But what I really like doing is improvising. So I think part of why I make documentaries is I like going into situations and having them present just moments that I can't expect or I can't dream up. You know, like when someone sees a landscape in Alaska. And all of a sudden, just in that one single moment, it all kind of wells up and hits him. Like, I really live for stuff like that. And so something I've learned over time is the lifestyle that I live with making these films, I think some people would really love and enjoy, and others wouldn't at all, because some people like a bit more structure and certainty with how things are going. So, but so far it's worked for me.
Anybody just joining in now on Spotlight Connecticut, I'm Morgan Cunningham. Our guest is Brendan Hall. He and I went to high school together. He's a freelance filmmaker. Everybody wants us to talk about space, but we're going to stay grounded for just a little bit longer, not too much longer. I do have a question here. When you're going to a new location, how do you prepare for it, other than obviously packing up your bags and getting your suitcase ready and getting all of your gear in order? That's not so much what I'm wondering. But the research that you put in when you're thinking about going to Greenland or Iceland or South America, wherever it is, what are you thinking leading up to that trip about the project?
It's different for every project. I think that I definitely do as much research as I can. I want to know the place. I want to know the climate. I want to know at least a little bit, ideally a lot, as much as I can about the culture, what we're going to be seeing. But a lot of those decisions also come from the storytelling and the filmmaking. So a lot of the work I do is with people and doing interviews and kind of diving into their personal stories. And so a lot of that research is talking to them ahead of time and kind of figuring out what that story is we want to capture when we're there. Or other times it's more expedition focused. So like Greenland, we were with Bill Nye, the science guy. And I was helping film for a documentary on Netflix with these really great directors, Jason Susberg and David Alvarado. And the long story short is a lot of that, they had kind of a plan and we had a plan with the gear, but it was just rolling with the situation, you know, taking a charismatic person, bringing him 200 miles from civilization onto a ice core drilling base and seeing what happens. And so it starts with the story, beginning with that dream and what do you want to capture, and then researching the gear, you know, the clothing, the suits, and all those limitations.
All right, here we are. The anticipation is built. If I make the audience wait any bit longer, they're going to kill me. So, Brendan, let's talk about space. Here it is, the big conversation everybody's been waiting for. And my first question is really a simple one. How? How did this come to be, Brendan Hall, that you're going to space as part of Dear Moon?
I've told this story before, but what really blows my mind about the whole thing was I heard about Dear Moon very much on a whim. I barely even remember first stumbling upon it. It wasn't something that someone sent me or that I'd been tracking to see when the applications would open up. But what I'll say is Yusaku Maezawa is leading the mission. He also goes by MZ. He had this vision of buying these seats on Starship with SpaceX and bringing 8 different artists and creatives on board with this idea that we've seen creative types go into space. Some of NASA's astronauts were very creative, but largely they're scientists and they weren't civilians. And this is a new perspective. I think that MZ's kind of whole pitch was, what if Beethoven or Mozart had gone up into space? What would they have created? How would they have been inspired? And I'm not saying I'm Beethoven or Mozart, but I do think that this group of honestly eccentric, but in the best way, and highly creative people will reflect this experience in a way that we haven't quite seen before. So when I saw it online, just through an article, I could have done anything differently that day, and I might never have seen this article. So it was just pure serendipity that I stumbled upon it. I just put in my name, I put in a couple photos of myself, and then that turned into a whole selection process that actually lasted pretty much the whole length of 2021. So early in 2021, I applied online. That turned into a written response that I wrote up about some of my experiences, a 1-minute video I ended up sending them, and then a series of interviews all the way through medical examination and psychological examination till we eventually all met up in person and did some group interviews and activities in person as well. And I specifically remember after doing the first Zoom interview where I actually saw real human faces and was talking to some of the Dear Moon staff, it went from being this, like, not silly, but just like beyond real kind of thing. You know, you just see something online, they're going to send you up to the moon, and you're like, yeah, whatever. It's kind of like, you know, applying for the lottery. But once I really did a Zoom interview and started talking with them, I felt just some really great energy. And I was like, you know what, I might actually be able to do this.
At some point during these interviews and the conversations, and you're meeting with the folks, part of the Dear Moon crew and the team making it all possible, did you think to yourself, oh man, this is happening? Like, before you actually knew you were going to be part of the crew, did you have this feeling that I should start getting ready for this?
I started feeling that. I'd done the solo Zoom interview. I'd done a group Zoom interview. I started getting a little real. I did a medical exam Zoom interview with some doctors from SpaceX. Like, there's some of their medical staff. And that was just very cool to do and see what they asked me and all that. But then I did an in-person medical exam where I was actually flown out to UCLA hospital to basically undergo like civilian flight medical exams to see if I'd be qualified and healthy to do this. And so that for sure was a really unique moment and kind of turning point in the process for me, because I realized that MZ was beginning to really invest in me as a potential candidate for this, as well as it was kind of rigorous testing and things where I realized that that applicant pool, where over a million people applied for this online, which I'm still baffled by. Not that that many people apply, but that I'm in the eight chosen for it. But I'd say it was during those medical examinations, it started getting pretty real. I remember after that, I go through this day, I'm like seeing my heart health and doing an EKG and chest and spine x-rays and all this stuff. And then in a couple of days after, I just hung out in Los Angeles with my girlfriend, Gabby. And that's when we really started having real conversations and reflection about all this. So I think that was the time I started saying some of the classic stuff of like, man, you got to get in shape. You know, you got to start making as good of decisions as you can. It's just a wild ride.
Absolutely a wild ride. And you're talking with your girlfriend and your family, obviously, about this before and certainly after you've been chosen. How did they react to the news that you're going to space?
Oh, man. Yeah. So when the moment I learned was Thanksgiving time of 2021, the Dear Moon team said, we want to do one final interview with you, ask you some questions, get to know you just a little bit better before we make our final decisions. And so I sat down in front of my laptop, like I got my lighting ready and I was all dressed nice. And then a Zoom screen came up. And every time it was really kind of daunting because like the little pinwheel would come up for Zoom and I'd just be sitting there waiting a minute or two until all of a sudden Dear Moon would come up and this like incredibly important interview in my life that could totally change my life was about to happen. Kind of felt like a job interview on steroids. And so I was sitting there and I thought it was another interview. And then the little pinwheel came up and it was just MZ just sitting there in a sweatshirt. And I was like, hey, how you doing? And he started talking to me. We made some small talk. And then he said, do you want to know the results of Dear Moon? We've made our decisions. And that's when he said, I'd like you to be a crew member. Would you like to join me on this mission? And so in that moment, I just fell back in my chair. I mean, I couldn't even believe it. And time just kind of froze in that moment, right, when I knew I was about to hear the results, because it was like, I grew up, I watched some American Idol with my mom growing up, and I remember that moment of you're waiting to see who the winner's going to be. And in my own, like, maybe miniature or big version of that, I mean, the stakes are pretty high. It felt like that, right? It's like this one moment that's about to change the entire course of your life. What was great was Gabby, my girlfriend, was actually on the other side of the door. And then she listened in through the door. And when I was selected in the call ended, she opened the door and she was crying and I had tears in my eyes. And that was amazing. And then I waited to tell my parents in person over Thanksgiving. And it was a mixture of joy and tears, happy tears, in disbelief, but also that really serious moment when my mom turned to me and she said, she was like, don't die. Like, I can't lose you. I can't have anything happen to you. And I support you doing this. And this is such an incredible thing. But just know, like, this is a real decision you're making. But also, I kept it pretty secret. And I had to, because the global announcement was a year. For a whole year, I had quite a few friends and people I was interacting with consistently that had no idea.
You mentioned how your mom's reaction was, don't die. Have you been worried at all about any kind of mishap? What are your emotions about that aspect, the safety and the potential danger involved?
Yeah, no, and it's a really important question. It's one I still take very seriously, and I made the decision, I think, based on feeling like this was something special, feeling like, aside from just the historic nature of it, I mean, it will be the first civilian crew ever in deep space and ever around the moon, and kind of potentially help be pioneers of this new era of privatized spaceflight. Feeling that gravity, that I could be a part of something like that, talking to MZ and really getting a sense that his intentions were pure and that he wanted to do something meaningful with this, and believing that deeply, which I still do, those were the reasons I decided to do this. At the end of the day, like, life's short and so much can happen. You never know what's going to happen. And so many kind of impossible, improbable things have led to that moment of me being selected, where I kind of decided during that process that if I get selected for this, I've decided I'm going to take the leap and go for it.
This is WTIC in Hartford.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 50% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your designer shoe warehouse store is on sale right now. Sneakers, boots, dress shoes, if they're on the clearance racks, they're 50% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from Masterclass to their lives. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. Masterclass.com/audio.
Hi, I'm John Heller from Granby, and I'm listening to Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Well, I can't believe on the telephone with me is Brendan Hall. He and I went to high school together, Ram High School in Hebron, Connecticut. And he's now going to outer space as part of the Dear Moon crew. And I just got to say, I don't know how to start the conversation with you, Brendan, other than just saying congratulations to you, my friend.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to talk about this.
Well, so many years have passed since you and I have seen one another and have talked, and I should probably just fill the audience in. It all began back in high school, Ram High School in Hebron, and you were a few grades ahead of me. When did you graduate?
I graduated 2012.
That's what I thought, 2012. I was the class of 2014, and when I was in, I believe it was freshman or sophomore year, you were part of Ram News, which was the closed circuit TV news station for all of the students to watch, and there was an elite group of broadcast journalists, and you were one of them. And I remember you had come up with this introduction to Ram News, and it made me think to myself, I want to be part of that. And I guess that you've never stopped with all of the photography and the video work, have you?
No, I got really lucky that I was passionate about it from when I was young. I mean, I started making films around when I was in middle school with just a little camcorder in my yard. And so I did the school news. I was really lucky to have those resources at school and have a chance to take my passion and actually get to implement it in classes and, you know, with great people like you. There's nothing like being around other people that are passionate about the same thing as you. I've just for years chased that, and it's brought me to all these kind of different and eccentric places at times, from documentaries. I made a lot of narrative short films in college. I filmed skateboarding for a series of summers. And so for me, filmmaking has always been just kind of my way of meeting people and having new experiences. So long story short is I kept making films, and now I'm lucky enough to do it for a living, which I think you can share too, Morgan, is to do something you're passionate about. Is it definitely keeps you going.
It really is. And I'm trying to pinpoint, what was the inspiration for you? Were you at home watching movies one day and you're like, this is cool, I want to experiment with this? Where did this itch from within you come?
I don't even think I quite realized this at the time, but I'd watch a lot of nature specials. I read National Geographic, and I watched a ton of movies. And so I was definitely really into it. But I just remember having kind of the itch to capture stuff. For some reason, just the idea of getting a camcorder, filming, I imagine, music videos and little movies with my friends was like the most exciting idea in the world to me. And a lot of what I do now is just trying to take that wonder I had and that pure passion back then and during those years and make sure that's still a part of my day-to-day practice of doing this. Because as pressures come in and doing it for a living, a passion starting so young really changes over time. But I'm just really grateful to have gotten to grow with it a little bit too.
Well, before we talk about going to outer space, which is next for you, you have been exploring the whole Mother Nature, planet Earth thing. Tell us some of the places that you've been to for photography, for video work.
So, I mean, I am lucky enough. I've gotten to travel all over the world, helping film documentaries, helping film videos for brands. And so, man, I've been to Greenland on a shoot with Bill Nye, the science guy. I've been to a lot of countries in Africa, Zambia, Nigeria, Tanzania. I've been to Iceland, the Congo, all around the United States, and I'm finishing a film now in national parks I've been working on for 5 years, actually, and so that film brought me to over 30 different national parks in the United States.
Who are you working with now? National Geographic, another partner?
I work as a freelancer. So I'm a director, cinematographer, and editor, and I have some really nice relationships with different companies, both that create films as well as brands like National Geographic. And so part of, I guess, the excitement, but some people would hate this, is the uncertainty of what I do is sometimes I never know where I'm going to travel even 2 or 3 weeks in advance. It's very much where jobs come to me and someone thinks I'm a good fit for something or I'm recommended. And I get to go out and do that work.
Wow. If you're learning just say 2-3 weeks before a big trip, you don't have a lot of time necessarily to research the project, or do you? Is that enough?
It depends on the project, you know, and with this space project, I'm lucky to have what right now is a year, but could end up being longer than that to do some deep research and take some time. Although that still feels like it's impending very quick. But what I really like doing is improvising. So I think part of why I make documentaries is I like going into situations and having them present just moments that I can't expect or I can't dream up. You know, like when someone sees a landscape in Alaska. And all of a sudden, just in that one single moment, it all kind of wells up and hits him. Like, I really live for stuff like that. And so something I've learned over time is the lifestyle that I live with making these films. I think some people would really love and enjoy, and others wouldn't at all, because some people like a bit more structure and certainty with how things are going. So, but so far it's worked for me.
Anybody just joining in now on Spotlight Connecticut, I'm Morgan Cunningham. Our guest is Brendan Hall. He and I went to high school together. He's a freelance filmmaker. Everybody wants us to talk about space, but we're going to stay grounded for just a little bit longer, not too much longer. I do have a question here. When you're going to a new location, how do you prepare for it, other than obviously packing up your bags and getting your suitcase ready and getting all of your gear in order? That's not so much what I'm wondering. But the research that you put in when you're thinking about going to Greenland or Iceland or South America, wherever it is, what are you thinking leading up to that trip about the project?
It's different for every project. I think that I definitely do as much research as I can. I want to know the place. I want to know the climate. I want to know at least a little bit, ideally a lot, as much as I can about the culture, what we're going to be seeing. But a lot of those decisions also come from the storytelling and the filmmaking. So a lot of the work I do is with people and doing interviews and kind of diving into their personal stories. And so a lot of that research is talking to them ahead of time and kind of figuring out what that story is we want to capture when we're there. Or other times it's more expedition focused. So like Greenland, we were with Bill Nye the Science Guy, and I was helping film for a documentary on Netflix with these really great directors, Jason Sussberg and David Alvarado. And the long story short is a lot of that, they had kind of a plan, and we had a plan with the gear, but it was just rolling with the situation, you know, taking a charismatic person, bringing him 200 miles from civilization onto a ice core drilling base and seeing what happens. And so it starts with the story, beginning with that dream and what do you want to capture, and then researching the gear, you know, the clothing, the suits, and all those limitations.
All right, here we are. The anticipation is built. If I make the audience wait any bit longer, they're going to kill me. So, Brendan, let's talk about space. Here it is, the big conversation everybody's been waiting for. And my first question is really a simple one. How? How did this come to be, Brendan Hall, that you're going to space as part of Dear Moon?
I've told this story before, but what really blows my mind about the whole thing was I heard about Dear Moon very much on a whim. I barely even remember first stumbling upon it. It wasn't something that someone sent me or that I'd been tracking to see when the applications would open up. But what I'll say is Yusaku Maezawa is leading the mission. He also goes by MZ. He had this vision of buying these seats on Starship with SpaceX and bringing eight different artists and creatives on board with this idea that we've seen creative types go into space. Some of NASA's astronauts were very creative, but largely they're scientists and they weren't civilians. And this is a new perspective. I think that MZ's kind of whole pitch was, what if Beethoven or Mozart had gone up into space? What would they have created? How would they have been inspired? And I'm not saying I'm Beethoven or Mozart, but I do think that this group of honestly eccentric, but in the best way, and highly creative people will reflect this experience in a way that we haven't quite seen before. So when I saw it online, just through an article, I could have done anything differently that day, and I might never have seen this article. So it was just pure serendipity that I stumbled upon it. I just put in my name, I put in a couple photos of myself, and then that turned into a whole selection process that actually lasted pretty much the whole length of 2021. So early in 2021, I applied online. That turned into a written response that I wrote up about some of my experiences, a one-minute video I ended up sending them, and then a series of interviews all the way through medical examination and psychological examination till we eventually all met up in person and did some group interviews and activities in person as well. And I specifically remember after doing the first Zoom interview where I actually saw real human faces and was talking to some of the Dear Moon staff, it went from being this like, not silly, but just like beyond real kind of thing. You know, you just see something online, they're going to send you up to the moon and you're like, yeah, whatever. It's kind of like, you know, applying for the lottery. But once I really did a Zoom interview and started talking with them, I felt just some really great energy. And I was like, you know what? I might actually be able to do this.
At some point during these interviews and the conversations, and you're meeting with the folks, part of the Dear Moon crew and the team making it all possible, did you think to yourself, oh man, this is happening? Like, before you actually knew you were going to be part of the crew, did you have this feeling that I should start getting ready for this?
I started feeling that. I'd done a solo Zoom interview. I'd done a group Zoom interview. I started getting a little real. I did a medical exam, a Zoom interview with some doctors from SpaceX. Like, there's some of their medical staff. And that was just very cool to do and see what they asked me and all that. But then I did an in-person medical exam where I was actually flown out to UCLA hospital to basically undergo like civilian flight medical exams to see if I'd be qualified and healthy to do this. And so that for sure was a really unique moment and kind of turning point in the process for me, because I realized that MZ was beginning to really invest in me as a potential candidate for this, as well as it was kind of rigorous testing and things where I realized that that applicant pool, where over a million people applied for this online, which I'm still baffled by. Not that that many people applied, but that I'm in the eight chosen for it. But I'd say it was during those medical examinations that started getting pretty real. I remember after that, I go through this day, I'm like seeing my heart health and doing an EKG and chest and spine x-rays and all this stuff. And then in a couple of days after, I just hung out in Los Angeles with my girlfriend, Gabby. And that's when we really started having real conversations and reflection about all this. So I think that was the time I started saying some of the classic stuff of like, man, you got to get in shape. You know, you got to start making as good of decisions as you can. It's just a wild ride.
Absolutely a wild ride. And you're talking with your girlfriend and your family, obviously, about this before and certainly after you've been chosen. How did they react to the news that you're going to space?
Oh, man. Yeah. So when the moment I learned was Thanksgiving time of 2021, the Dear Moon team said, we want to do one final interview with you, ask you some questions, get to know you just a little bit better before we make our final decisions. And so I sat down in front of my laptop, like I got my lighting ready and I was all dressed nice. And then a Zoom screen came up. And every time it was really kind of daunting because like the little pinwheel would come up for Zoom and I'd just be sitting there waiting a minute or two until all of a sudden Dear Moon would come up and this like incredibly important interview in my life that could totally change my life was about to happen. Kind of felt like a job interview on steroids. And so I was sitting there and I thought it was another interview. And then a little pinwheel came up and it was just MZ just sitting there in a sweatshirt. And I was like, hey, how you doing? And he started talking to me. We made some small talk. And then he said, do you want to know the results of Dear Moon? We've made our decisions. And that's when he said, I'd like you to be a crew member. Would you like to join me on this mission? And so in that moment, I just fell back in my chair. I mean, I couldn't even believe it. And time just kind of froze in that moment, right, when I knew I was about to hear the results, because it was like I grew up, I watched some American Idol with my mom growing up, and I remember that moment of you're waiting to see who the winner's going to be. And in my own, like, maybe miniature or big version of that, I mean, the stakes are pretty high. It felt like that, right? It's like this one moment that's about to change the entire course of your life. What was great was Gabby, my girlfriend, was actually on the other side of the door. And then she listened in through the door. And when I was selected in the call ended, she opened the door and she was crying and I had tears in my eyes. And that was amazing. And then I waited to tell my parents in person over Thanksgiving. And it was a mixture of joy and tears, happy tears, in disbelief, but also that really serious moment when my mom turned to me and she said, she was like, don't die. Like, I can't lose you. I can't have anything happen to you. And I support you doing this. And this is such an incredible thing. But just know, like, this is a real decision you're making. But also, I kept it pretty secret. And I had to, because the global announcement was a year. For a whole year, I had quite a few friends and people I was interacting with consistently that had no idea.
You mentioned how your mom's reaction was, don't die. Have you been worried at all about any kind of mishap? What are your emotions about that aspect, the safety and the potential danger involved?
Yeah, no, and it's a really important question. It's one I still take very seriously, and I made the decision, I think, based on feeling like this was something special, feeling like, aside from just the historic nature of it, I mean, it will be the first civilian crew ever in deep space and ever around the moon, and kind of potentially help be pioneers of this new era of privatized spaceflight. Feeling that gravity, that I could be a part of something like that, talking to MZ and really getting a sense that his intentions were pure and that he wanted to do something meaningful with this, and believing that deeply, which I still do, those are the reasons I decided to do this. At the end of the day, like, life's short and so much can happen. You never know what's going to happen, and so many kind of impossible, improbable things have led to that moment of me being selected, where I kind of decided during that process that if I get selected for this, I've decided I'm going to take the leap and go for it.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham.
As we look back on some of my favorite episodes and some of the more memorable ones, this one stirred the pot. And that was not the point. It wasn't intended to be controversial. But here's the thing. This is what I've never talked about publicly. Some of the episodes have gotten a reaction. Well, why didn't you do this? Why did you do that? Why did you talk to this person? Why didn't you go there? You know, and that's not necessarily anything unique to my talk show. That happens a lot when you work in media. People are always criticizing and offering feedback and making suggestions and making idea suggestions and requests. So that's fine. It comes with the job. But it happens with some episodes more than others. But this one really stood out because the backlash I got for this episode was absolutely incredible. I wanted to do a show on soda because here in Connecticut, there are several places that actually manufacture and sell their own soda. And I wanted to do a show on a place that people don't know about. That's the whole point of Spotlight Connecticut. So I went over to Hosmer Mountain Soda in Willimantic, and I recorded a show with them. But I was bombarded with remarks from strangers in the audience, from coworkers at the station, from personal friends, all saying to me, why didn't you go to Avery's? Morgan, why didn't you go to Avery's? Avery's is, you know, a greater Hartford phenomenon, and they have that market cornered, but Hosmer Mountain has Eastern Connecticut cornered, and they're there with Bears at Duncan Park and all of that. And so I learned a lot just by going to Hosmer's and doing something different, but here's what I've got to say to the fans of Avery's. It was not intentional. It was just the way things worked out, and I'd love to do a show on Avery's. I don't know when I'll get to it, but it is part of the to-do list, so do not worry. There will be a show on Avery's. We're only a year old here, folks. We'll get to it.
This is WTIC in Hartford.
Hi, my name is Sue. I'm from Rocky Hill, and I'm listening to Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham.
Our guest this week on Spotlight Connecticut is one of the owners at Hosmer Mountain Soda in Willimantic. They distribute sodas throughout Eastern Connecticut for the most part. Maybe they do some parts of Rhode Island and some parts west of the river, but it's mostly Eastern Connecticut. Bill Potvin's our guest, and I just love his last name because it's French. It means jug of wine, which is just so appropriate because your whole family has been part of the beverage industry now for several decades.
Yes. When I was about 10 or 11, my father bought the company from the previous, the widow of the owner who had passed away around 55 from a heart attack. It was probably on the downward swing then because that was a time when a lot of little bottlers were being pushed out by the corporate wave that covers all, pretty much all businesses in the country. But when I was 11, me and my brother John worked with my dad right here in this space we're standing in right now.
Let's talk about the business model here at Hosmer's Mountain, because you guys have partnerships with restaurants and other businesses, mostly across Eastern Connecticut, maybe some other parts of the state, I imagine, but it's largely focused on Eastern Connecticut.
It is.
A little bit of Rhode Island, too, maybe?
Not too much, but we do have one distributor that goes into Rhode Island. Our own trucks don't go that far. We still self-distribute in Northeast Connecticut, which that involves some of the old towns like Putnam, Danielson, and we still do some home delivery too. But I would say a good part of our business now is restaurants that like to have a local product. We're very fortunate. There's been a trend towards more appreciation for local. Thank God.
You mentioned home delivery, really?
I think home delivery got us through years and years when we were the only people that would do that. We had probably, I'm guessing we had as many as 1,800 customers that we would call up every other week, usually every other week, a telephone call, what would you like this week type of thing. And the other little bottlers who were still going on, they did the same thing. So it was a little model that it was a niche that you had to yourself. The big people weren't going to do anything. My dad had written on his step vans, which he had then. We don't have the step van type of truck. But the slogan back then in around 1962 was delivered to your door for less than at a store. I.e., we were bringing soda to somebody's house for less than they would pay at the market. Which when you think about that, you'll say, how can a company pay for the gas and a driver and everything and save somebody some money on top of it? That was a mistake in a way, because he should have been getting a premium for that level of service, really. And we would mix a case, too. You could get a case with different flavors in it. So, but it was something that it's faded a little bit, but we still have people who are loyal users under that system. It's not like a milkman where you bring something automatically. You want to make sure somebody approves of the delivery and they can change their order each time. We still do that.
You have a guy that does the deliveries or somebody that drives the truck around the state every day or every few days?
Yeah, we have two or three trucks, and we do our routes regularly. They're called from here in this store, 217 Mountain Street, Willie, and we have another store in Manchester, the Hosmer Mountain Soda Shack, that he calls the routes that were out a little further away. We go as far as Enfield, Suffield, and Vernon, Manchester, all out that way, come out of the Manchester store.
Yeah, shout out to the Manchester CJ's restaurant, because that's what ended up leading me to here. I've known about you guys forever, and I've been doing this talk show now for a few months. I went to CJ's, and I was there with my mom. We were getting lunch, and I said, oh, I'll have a Hosmer's. And as I'm drinking it, I said, wait a second. I ought to have them on the talk show. So here we are talking about Hosmer Mountain Soda in Willimantic, serving Eastern Connecticut. I love how you guys have a lot of paper systems, right? There's something old school. You break out the binder. I see it in the office there. You've got your client list. You've got your information. Talk about the system, how you guys keep this place organized.
Well, we're a small business, so we still do things that are, I would call them, somewhat comforting to the consumer. When somebody calls Hosmer, you don't go through all that crazy stuff. A person calls up Hosmer Mountain, can I help you? We return calls. Everybody who has some kind of a problem or a curiosity we get calls like, is this stuff in the product? For instance, somebody who's got celiac disease.
So gluten.
Yeah, gluten, yeah. Is your soda gluten-free? So I get a note from the clerk, might leave little notes, and I'll call back personally and tell them that we don't use gluten. You know, there's no reason to have gluten in a soda, you know. So those are the kind of things that small business does that are nice to the consumer, where you actually get some attention. We care. You always care, because when you're a small company, it's easy to care when every customer is a significant part of your business. Whereas if you're pounding out multiple million dollars, one customer, you can shed it without any pain at all. And generally, I try not to think that way.
What do you hear from businesses that partner with you guys?
We also sell syrup to restaurants. So, for instance, probably our biggest customer is Bear's Smokehouse. Jamie McDonald was a person who was in the barbecue business out in, I think it was Kansas City, when he came to the East here. It didn't take him too long to find out that there was this company that makes a variety of real tasty soda. And so he decided to call us and ask us if we were willing to extend our business. And we were in the syrup business already, but we latched onto his account. And who would have known? He's got contracts with UConn. He's a very, promoter of
he's all over the place.
Yeah, and so he has Front Street, which is where UConn moved their West Hartford school. So there's a lot of people down there. And he's got a big one up near the airport in Windsor, And they use a lot of syrup, you know, a big, big cup of syrup with free refills. And sometimes people who go to barbecue places, they're not a calorie conscious, you know. They're looking for a tasty meal, you know.
Right, they're going to the sporting event. They want their tasty meal. So this syrup, it's not pancake syrup. We're talking about soda syrup.
Yeah, it's the same syrup that would go into a bottle. When you make soda, there's one part of that syrup with five parts of carbonated water. That's how we bottle it. Those machines that you go to McDonald's or any, that dispenser does the same thing as a bottling machine. It'll take one little line with a squirt of a certain flavor that you selected, and five parts of carbonated water will mix right in the cup. So it's the same identical process. So we can take our syrup for any flavor, put it into a box of syrup, a plastic bag and a corrugated box, and then deliver it to a restaurant, and then they and we got a pretty good price advantage over the big guys, so we can save restaurants a lot of money. We're not installing any more equipment because me and my brothers are going through our 70s, so we're not thinking the same way we thought when we were 30. Let's leave it at that.
Our guest this week on Spotlight Connecticut is a great guy, Bill Potvin. He is a vice president here at Hosmer Mountain Soda in Willimantic, which is where I am. I'm in the store right now, the retail store. Give me some numbers, right? So when you're making a run of soda, about how many bottles do you make? How many different flavors? Is it one flavor a day? You make 1,000 bottles. How much syrup you go through? I'm curious.
It's a good question. There's a minimum. My brother, who's the president and the general manager, the bottler, he's always been very, we've had difficulties over the time because I want to learn something when I, especially in the days when I was trying to improve the product. If you made a batch of soda that lasted 3 or 4 months, then I couldn't, if I realized I had to make another tweak on it, I'd have to wait. So I was always encouraging small runs, but he won't make any run now that's less than 2 pallets. 130 cases is the minimum. So in a given day, if we're making 3 or 4 flavors of that level, we can make 3 or 4 of those in a day. Some of our bigger sellers, you would never make that size batch of root beer, for instance, our number one seller. So we would make a batch of 450 cases of root beer at a clip. So that would take 2/3 of a day. You might be able to make one of them and another batch of a smaller one in per day. So the size of the batch has a lot to do with efficiency, and you know, and that's related to your profit. So if you're forced to make small batches all the time, it's harder to make a living.
Are you doing those every day or every few days?
The number of days we bottle right now, of course, you're talking to me in what is it, February? Yeah, this is the midwinter, so we've been bottling 2 days a week now. That's all we need to do.
Is it different in the summer?
Yeah, then you're bottling 4 days a week.
Why in the summer? Why is it more popular then? Because of the gatherings?
More thirst, I think. People are more dehydrated, they're more active. So definitely there's more need for liquids and stuff, and soft drinks fit right in there. So there's always been that seasonal variety. Not only that, but we do business with seasonal accounts, you know, campgrounds, seasonal kind of business that are closed for the winter months. So that's going to slow you down too. So between those two things, it's a very seasonal type of business.
What's next for you guys?
Getting out. We've been for sale for a long time. We know that we couldn't do this forever, and we've known that there's not another generation. Out of the four brothers who ran this for probably 40 years, me and my three other brothers, one of us has passed away, John, and now there's three of us. I didn't have children, and my brother Chuck didn't. So John and Andy did have children, but they never had any interest in getting in because, number one, they saw us working 60 hours a week, and they knew that we weren't making an awful lot of money. You know, we drive older cars, we own our own houses and stuff, but it doesn't look like the model that a young person would say, I can't wait to get into that. And that's what happens with things like that. And you see that in farming too. You know, they see a farmer, their dad working so hard, and they're land rich, and money poor. So they might sell some land periodically to a developer to make things come out. And so, you know, it's not people climbing on top of each other to see who's going to get control of the farm. And I think that's a little bit of our experience too.
If you're looking for a buyer, what are you looking for in that person?
My personal thing is I would like to have a buyer that has a historic mind, that appreciates the reputation we've built and doesn't want to just destroy that and say, wow, I love the formulas, I think I'll take the formulas, get a hold of the company, and then shut down what they do and take it to California and make some real money. That type of thing. A venture capitalist type of person, personally, I wouldn't have any interest in passing it on to that type of. I'd rather have a person that can at least continue the legacy that we've developed through the years, where people appreciate who we are.
Have you found that person yet?
We think so.
You think so?
We do. Yeah, we have a local guy that's in the area that's already done something very positive with another rundown little place. And he's got the money and the energy and ability to do that kind of a thing. So we've been talking a little bit, and I'm hoping that that's the one that does it. My brothers, I'm not sure that they would value that as opposed to somebody who's going to pay 50% more. So yeah, if you're just thinking money, then you want to get the top dollar. If you're thinking maintaining our legacy and stuff, then you might let something like go. I would vote for that.
Last question, and I want it to be a fun one. Can you pick a favorite flavor, and what is it?
I think that one of the best tasting things we make, believe it or not, is called Red Lightning. It's a energy drink that's not dangerous. Most of the energy drinks are loaded with caffeine, and there's been problems. Sometimes you get these young males that hang around convenience stores. They dare each other to drink three Monsters, and they chug them down, and they're on the ground with a heart palpitation and emergency room visit. So when I made the one we did, I asked the chemist who had the pharmaceutical blend to make it, can you get the caffeine down? So our energy drink is similar to Coke and Pepsi. It's about 5-10% less caffeine. So it couldn't happen where we have that kind of a call saying, there's somebody in the hospital you put in there. That I don't need. But it's a wonderful, tasty drink. It's got a wonderful flavor. I say, does it remind you of a fruit roll-up? And people, yeah, that tastes like a fruit roll-up.
You know what else I love? I think that it's so fun. You've got a sarsaparilla. You've got something called Lime Ricky.
Yes, Lime Ricky is an old-fashioned soda that probably was designed as a mixer. It's quite tart. It's got a nice lime flavor to it, a nice aroma, and it's a little bit sour. We have another lime, the regular lemon and lime, that's a deeper green, and all bottlers in the old days had a lemon and lime. You had to have the color. You know, we're a retro company, so we try to make products that are bold, bright, flavorful, and bring back the good old days. That's what we're trying to do here. And Lime Ricky has got a following. You could put gin or vodka in it, or you can drink it plain.
Bill, I've loved our conversation. Is there anything that we didn't get to?
Yeah, I would like to mention the fact that just the same trend that occurred in the beer business, where all of a sudden you got people who are not necessarily allegiant to Budweiser and Miller. The microbrews that are around, and we have quite a few microbrew companies that draw people to their place, and they carry our soda too, because some of the kids that are coming with them can have a root beer or a lemonade or something like that at the place. So I don't know if I can name them, but I bet there's at least a dozen microbrews that carry our product, and that's a good match right there. You know, it's another business that's non-corporate, and that's what I like.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham, embracing what's fun with Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.